It's time for JT the Brick on Fox Sports Vegas.
So here we go with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Hey, since Christmas, it's a whole different team.
We're just playing strong defensive hockey.
This team is playing at a very high level.
Knights win their sixth in a row.
They prove that they're a playoff team.
Feeds Tuck in front, he shoots, he scores! Alex Tuck wins it!
I'd be pretty happy as a Vegas Golden Knight fan.
I'm all in, brother.
And for Gallant, I think he's pretty happy.
Yeah, real happy.
Way to go, Golden Knights. I mean, what a run. What a run they've been on.
Carlson scores from the left wing!
The radio show's priority is the flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm all in, brother.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Great to have you, JT, with you. Coming off the weekend, courtesy of Golden Entertainment. Thanks for the kickstart in the monologue, PT's 60 plus Cactus in Las Vegas Boulevard, PT's Gold, and the reconfiguration, the success, the imaging of the Strat, formerly the Stratosphere, all here for the best happy hour in town, starting at the top of next hour, 5 o'clock, 5 to 7, midnight to 2, where you can go watch hockey and the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll talk about hockey here in the opening of the show because I went to the game Saturday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Vegas Golden Knights lost. I don't think I've been at a loss at T-Mobile. It's been, I'm sure there's one I'm forgetting, but since the Cup went to the Washington Capitals. It was, to me, a bizarre, not disturbing, it's a regular season game. They have two really good teams. But the way this team loses a game from time to time with a lead with Fleury is shocking to me. I mean, I know a lot of people agree with me. It's shocking when this team has a goal lead and they lose in the third period with under 6-7 minutes to go. I'm just shocked by it. We'll talk about that. It's a huge day in the NFL. There's breaking news in the NFL that we'll lead with. We'll talk about UNLV, and we'll obviously get you out of here prepared to talk about the new AAF, the new football league, which I liked. I liked it. Matter of fact, I want to lead with that. This week, weekend was the launch of a new football league, the Alliance of American Football. I watched it, and I liked it, and I couldn't believe it because I was a part of the launch of the XFL. I was the play-by-play voice for the Las Vegas Outlaws. Remember, he hate me when that happened. So I watched that really close because that was a radio gig, but I thought I was going to be a part of that league for a number of years. Why not? They launched it with Vince McMahon, these flyovers. It was crazy. And it was here in Vegas. They played the first game. And the paychecks weren't that big, but I was looking around saying, this is nice. This could build into something. Maybe I'll be the voice of football in Vegas for years to come. Well, the reason that didn't work was because it launched with a high rating. Everybody kind of liked it. It was based on sex, not football. It was based on cheerleaders wearing sexy outfits with cameras on women. So that wasn't the success for football. The product on the field was far worse than the product that we saw over the weekend for the AAF, which was a really good product, I thought. I watched the football over the weekend, and the quality of play, to me, was solid. But here was the hook. What happened with the launch of the league is there was one really aggressive play where the quarterback had his helmet popped off on a hit by a rushing defender, which in the NFL would have been a 15-yard personal foul, roughing the passer, and in this league, they didn't throw the flag. Now, they didn't throw the flag for one of two reasons. Number one, they made a mistake, and in football, everybody makes mistakes, right? They need instant replay and instant replay transparency, and we even get plays wrong with instant replay in the NFL. So I don't expect them to get it right in this other league, which is the many, 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 many minor leagues of the NFL. But they didn't throw a flag on one of the most violent plays I've seen this year, and everybody loved it. Everybody got on social media and said, this is great. I love this. They're not going to throw the flag. This is the new way to watch football. I don't know if that's the case or not, if they got it wrong or they're going to. Let's agree to this, that they're going to throw less flags. They're going to throw less flags, then you're going to like this league. So this weekend, I had one of my best friends, a fireman from New York City, in town with his son, who's 18 years old, my son's 17. So we were going to the game, and it was rainy this weekend. It was kind of a washout weekend. A lot of things we wanted to do, we couldn't do outside because it was 39 bleeping degrees, and it was raining. So we were stuck in the house. So we were going outside. We were going to a restaurant, and this new football league was on. And every time I looked up, we were all saying, these are kids with me, going, wow, this is pretty cool. Look at that bomb. Look at that catch. He got his feet in bounds. Look at that tackle. So congratulations to the AAF for their launch. I thought overall it was pretty solid. I don't know what's going to come of it. But remember, it's a television show. So the only way it could work, it's like all the other crap that they launch on television. The Masked Singer on Fox is garbage. Dancing with the Stars is typically based on a theory of ballroom dancing with C to D list celebrities who have been busted for cocaine, DUIs, or thrown off other TV shows. They put them on a dancing show. They do ballroom dancing and they get huge ratings, like 14 million people watch. That's why it's still on TV, because people watch it. So the question is, it's the Dancing with the Stars, Kardashian, Big Brother theory. How are people going to tune in week after week after week and watch this football league? I have the answer. Violence. This has to be the alternative to the sissy look of the NFL now, where we believe that quarterbacks have skirts on, and if you put a fingernail on them, there's going to be a flag. Or there's going to be flags on every play. The only way I think this is going to work. Because, you know, Bill Polian's involved, Hines Ward, really good coaches. Rick Neuheisel, Mike Riley, seeing Mike Singletary out there, looking at Steve Spurrier. That was a smart move. So all of it, to me, played out nicely over the weekend. Because Vegas is an XFL town, we are the capital of the original XFL when they launched this league. And we're going to have an NFL team coming here shortly with the Raiders. Will you watch the AAF? Did you watch it over the weekend? And what did you like about it? That's what we do here every day. We want someone else's opinions other than mine. Did you watch it? Did you enjoy it? Will you watch it again? 876-1340. And if you watched it and liked it, what did you like about it? I think I watched enough of it to know that it had to do with the violence, the transparency on replay, the replay official. There was a woman who had a microphone, a headset on, and as she was trying to figure out instant replay, she was saying, well, I originally thought that initially, now I think this. We loved it. We want the NFL to do that. Now, I don't think the NFL is going to be transparent about their video replay. They make enough mistakes in the NFL to put a camera and a microphone in front of a replay official who's going to screw it up. But overall, I liked it. Oh, and the broadcasts were good. That was the other hook. CBS was doing the games. It got the same rating or a little bit more, no matter who you listen to or follow. The first round of AAF games did better than the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was pretty cool. So what you're going to hear this week is sports talk radio hosts like myself talking it up. You're also going to hear CBS spinning that it was better and it's great and watch again. And then you're going to hear more people come on board because they didn't watch it in week one and they're going to come in week two or three. But if they're not watching it in week six or seven, the league will fold just like the XFL folded. I've told people this from quite some time when they asked me about my experience in the XFL. They said, why did it fail? And I'll tell you why it failed. It didn't have to fail. It could have went on 2 or 3 years. Vince McMahon was such a smart businessman that he realized that he was going to lose money at the millions upon millions upon millions a week. And being such a smart businessman with wrestling, he said, I'm not going to lose any money. Dump it. And he got out of it. That's the only reason they did it. They could have kept that league in business, the XFL, for 2 or 3 years at a loss and kept it afloat with their sponsors. But Vince McMahon looked around at the deal and said, no, if we're going to continue to lose money, let's get out. Let's get out of this so we all don't get wiped out with this venture. Probably turned out to be a smart decision. I like the AAF. I thought it was pretty good. If you liked it, give me a call, 876-1340. And if you missed it, did you miss it because you just missed it and couldn't find it? Or did you miss it because you didn't want to watch football a week after the Super Bowl? I thought it was also smart for them to go right behind the Super Bowl. I don't want to watch football in July and August. I want to watch it in February, March, and April. So I'm pulling for this league. I really am. I hope this league does well, and I think it'll be a good minor leagues for the NFL, and the NFL can build off that. And look, if the NFL gets 2 or 3 players or 4 or 5, 6 players a year coming from this league, and they make a roster, who's going to have a problem with that? Jobs, jobs, jobs. It provides jobs for stadium workers, television workers, everybody behind the scenes. So I'm a fan of it as I watched it over the weekend. Let's get to the Vegas Golden Knights and the loss at home to Columbus. And I would say this is a bad loss. Two things happened. Bad loss and flurry owns this loss. Fleury didn't play well. Made a couple of high-profile mistakes in the hockey game where he was the reason for the loss. How many times have I sat behind this microphone on the flagship and said that the reason that they lost the game was Fleury? I could count zero. I'm doing it for the first time because he wasn't sharp coming back home again. Down 1-0, the Schmidt goal got him even in a game where they were building momentum.
Schmidt to the right, Marchessault awaits, back for Schmidt, right circle, centers, deflected in! Vegas ties the game 1-1, 30 seconds after they fell behind.
That was exciting. Typical VGK hockey. They fall behind, they score a goal quickly. The shorthanded goal by Merrill was really special here because they're third in the league in shorthanded goal, and they need to build on this heading into the playoffs.
Vegas gets a defensive zone faceoff win out. They come shorthanded, 2-on-1. Smith on the left with Carlson. Couldn't finish. Rebound in front for Merrill. He scores! John Merrill shorthanded, and the Knights take a 2-1 lead.
Then it went to 2-2, and we were feeling pretty good at this point. Fleury made a couple of big saves, and then a tie game where Eakin made a big decision on this goal. I thought this was going to be the game winner because it looked like Vegas was going to steal the game this way.
Into the zone, two men cutting, score! Cody Eakin! 3-2 Golden Knights with 10:39 to go in the third. Belmar up the left side, found the trailer, Cody Eakin. Ryan Reeves crashing the net, he drew the attention. Cody Eakin found the puck, he rips it home.
That's a 3-2 lead. And now this city's got to become accountable. The hockey fans in this city must become accountable with a third period lead with 10 minutes to go, and you give up two goals and you lose. Unacceptable at any level, flagship station or not. Does anybody got the balls to point fingers at this team when they blow a game? This was a blown opportunity by your Vegas Golden Knights. You got a Hall of Fame goaltender in net. You got the lead at home against a competitive team, a playoff team. You've got to win these games. And they found a way to lose. Were they sluggish? Were they sloppy? Absolutely. Were they just not as powerful as they were in the first period? They didn't play well in the second. What happened to this team where they would let Columbus tie the game and then eventually win it on this?
Feed from the right, shot turned away by Fleury. Kim Atkinson hitting for his second of the period. Atkinson again, right circle, he shoots, he scores! Kim Atkinson, his second of the period, power play goal, and the Blue Jackets back on top, 4-3.
Blue Jackets end up getting it done. They win the game. They were the better team. So cause for concern? I'm starting to get a little bit concerned on the way they're losing some of these games. I like the end of the road trip. We talked about that with Gary Lawless last week. But you got to be critical of this team. You love this team. I love this team. We're behind this team. But all real hockey cities call out the team or at least point on what happened in the game. What happened with the Vegas Golden Knights? Why did they lose that game, which turns out to be an important game? It's the first game of a homestand of 8-9 at home. It takes momentum away, and now you got to go find it again. Will the team be okay? Absolutely. But Gerard Gallant was not happy with the effort of the Vegas Golden Knights, especially in the second period.
First period, we played great hockey in the first period. We really liked it, and I didn't expect that second period at all. We just didn't have no jump. We looked like we were skating in quicksand and, you know, caught up to us a little bit. But, again, we got out of the second period 2-2, and we're in good shape. And I thought we played a real good third period until the last, you know, they scored a couple of goals late.
That's a really good coach. I mean, he owns it. He knows that the team didn't play well in the second period. That's on him and his staff for not having the guys ready to come back at home in the second period. But Vegas has lost. You know, that win against Tampa Bay was their biggest road regular season game of the year. They beat the best team in hockey. So that was positive, but this was just a loss to a really good team at home, a game they should have won.
Just because Nabber didn't catch him, and I mean, the guy's got an unbelievable feat, so that happens in part of a game. And then the power play goal was a great shot, and like I said, it was unfortunate because I thought we played a good first period and a real good third period, and they capitalized late. So it doesn't happen to us too often, but it's a tough one tonight.
This is the flagship. We're here. This is a team that's going to be home for a while. If you're going to the next game or a couple of games this week, let us know. 876-1340. I'm on Twitter, at JTTheBrick, on what happens after losses like this. Why are you not concerned, or did you see something at the hockey game that is concerning to you that there could be a trend developing? Lack of scoring by certain lines, a defensive lapse. To me, this is a game I just point on Fleury. I watched the game with a hockey goalie, and the hockey goalie said to me, wow, I was expecting a better game out of him. He was caught behind the net. He made a mistake. He didn't have a great game. It was not Fleury-esque for a guy that I believe is the face of the franchise. I don't think you got to rip the guy. I don't think you got to point hard fingers at him. But, hey, Fleury lost that game because he did not play his best game. And that's what this team relies on. This team relies on a Hall of Fame goaltender playing great. If they're going to win close games, it's going to happen from time to time. And finally, as we wrap up the monologue brought to you by PT's Happy Hour 5 to 7, best happy hour in town, Kareem Hunt is back after his domestic issues, and he has signed with the Cleveland Browns. This is a really big deal because he's one of the best young players in the league, period. The Cleveland Browns just signed a Pro Bowler to their roster because of his transgressions, hit pushing and kicking a woman who was on the ground and was let go by the Kansas City Chiefs. This is an important topic for all of us to understand because it really defines what you think about domestic violence. Do you either forgive people who have an issue with domestic violence and then have a zero tolerance after that, or do you throw a player out like this for the rest of his career? You know he was going to get a second chance, and it's a good fit with Cleveland because the general manager of the Cleveland Browns drafted him in Kansas City, and they feel like they could rehabilitate him and get him back into the league. Browns general manager John Dorsey drafted Hunt for the Chiefs in 2017, and he's excited. They say they've done extensive research in regards to the case. He told reporters earlier today he understands and takes full responsibility for the act he committed. He's extremely remorseful for his actions. So let's stop for a second. Whenever a man puts his hands on a woman, he should be very remorseful, but he never should have done it in the first place. But when you're a professional athlete or an entertainer or you're a high-profile person, more people are going to know about your domestic issue than something that happens countless times a day here in the Valley. Pushing and shoving, kicking, husband and wife and everything that happens. You're not going to hear about that, but you're going to hear about it when it comes to an NFL player. I've interviewed Kareem Hunt. He was an absolute gentleman and kind kid the time I met him and took a picture with him and had him on for 10 or 15 minutes. But I didn't know him at all. I don't know his character. So the NFL's still going to come down with a fine. I believe that that fine will probably be 8 to 10 games. It cannot be 6. That didn't work in the past. The NFL knows that that'd be a black eye to the league. So Hunt is 23 years old. He apologized to the woman, the victim, in the February incident. The Chiefs organization looked at the video and cut him. Now he's available and he's an all-star. I repeat, do you treat different players differently than others? Do you look at a star factor of Kareem Hunt and say, you know, guy's going to play again. He's 23. He made a terrible mistake. He's going to pay the price, but I want him on my team. This is the absolute same thing. Take aside domestic violence for a second, which I deplore. I deplore. I'm on the board of the Biletnikoff Foundation. I abhor domestic violence. That being said, a 23-year-old in the work environment at your job, my job, football, is going to get a second chance. They're not going to get a second chance with your company. They're going to have to leave your company and go to another company. And that company is going to hire a lawyer or a medical technician, or a plumber, or someone else, because they're great at their craft, and they're able to give them another opportunity. Well, that's what Kareem Hunt's getting. He's better to me than Le'Veon Bell, who I believe that the Raiders should go after. So why don't you dive into that for a second, and don't pull over in the car and think of that for a second. If Kareem Hunt never had a domestic issue, he would be, to me, the number one choice for the Oakland Raiders. Number one, if they were able to get him in a trade or free agency, he's that good. But Mark Davis won't touch it and go near that, nor would I. But he comes due, he's going to pay the price, he's going to sit out 8 to 10 games, and I could promise you, he's going to be on Cleveland, and he's going to be great. And he's going to be 23, 24 years old, and he's going to go back to the Pro Bowl with Baker Mayfield and a bunch of great players on that team. Where do you stand on the signing by Cleveland? Do you believe in forgiveness? Did you want to ban this 23-year-old kid for life? And do you believe he'll be the X factor in bringing Cleveland to the top. And I'm talking to the playoffs and an opportunity to win a championship. 876-1340 is the number. When we come back, we'll talk about the draft coming up. And that's something I'm going to be really hammering away at here in the next couple of months as the Raiders have three picks in the first round. Dan Shanka will join us from Our Lads. He's one of the best. He's a renowned scout. He's been in the business for over 30 years. And Our Lads has the best guide out there if you're into the draft. Dan Shanka will join us coming up next. What are the Raiders going to do? What should they do with a couple of their picks?
Magic, I think, is, from my point of view now, listening to him talk and stuff like that, he's just a face. I don't think his say-so is like his say-so is.
Really?
I know it's not, because he told me some things that I thought that should have been done. That's nothing.
Well, then who is in charge?
No, I'm trying to figure out who's in charge. That's why the system is crumbling down for, I don't know what's going on over there.
Is Jeannie in charge? Jeannie Buss?
Hey, she just said some stuff that she said. She's the one who told Magic to get Lonzo. So, hey, who going to say that? If she said that, she's throwing him under the bus. Like, you ain't the one. If Magic wanted Fox, why you didn't get Fox? Unless somebody above you said, hey, don't get Fox. I think I like this guy a little better.
Well, that's LeVar Ball back on FS1. JT back, courtesy of the Henderson Hyundai Superstore. Boulder Highway in Henderson, they have the super deals you're looking for, especially right now. Also heading into what is a big holiday weekend coming up here. Just quickly, we have to move Dan Shanka. He's running a little bit late from Our Lads. We'll get him hopefully by the end of the show. Mr. Michael Lee is supposed to join us here momentarily. He was coming up at the bottom of the hour, but we'll try to get him up here a little bit earlier than that. Very quickly on LeVar Ball's comments on Magic. This is shocking to me again. Not that LeVar Ball would appear on FS1. It's just the fact that the people on the TV show would go, really? Wow, who's in charge? Imagine being on television or being a former journalist and looking at LeVar Ball in makeup and saying, really? Who's in charge? What you're doing is stirring the pot on cable sports to try to get something going. And LeVar Ball is willing to be a part of the straw that stirs the drink. Magic Johnson is the face of the Lakers and has a real job. He has a more serious job with the Lakers than he has with the Dodgers, where he's more of a face of the Dodgers that shows up during some Dodger games and signs some baseballs. He's a legendary basketball player. He's supposed to know the difference between talent or not. I think that the Lakers have handled this Anthony Davis situation poorly. Terribly, to be obvious with you. And now the rest of the league, not only the New Orleans Pelicans, but the Knicks and the Bulls and the Heat and Portland all know that the Lakers are desperate going forward. Now, Lakers might be fine. They got LeBron James. Whoever they get, they might get Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, whoever it's going to be. The Lakers should be back sooner than later. But if they're not, ooh. Oh, if they're not, and you don't get rid of Lonzo and some of these players, it's going to be fun to watch the Lakers. The Lakers are not melting down, but they're letting everybody into their house to see the dysfunction. This isn't the Lakers of Shaq and Kobe. This isn't the Lakers of Magic and Kareem. This is a new era of Lakers now with a bunch of young kids who are really immature and upset that they're on the trade block. Mr. Michael Lee, that's how you can follow him. He's at The Athletic, one of the premier NBA insiders out there. Appreciate that he can join us. Michael, thanks for coming on. Let's begin. Why didn't Anthony Davis become a Laker right before the trade deadline?
Because they just didn't want to be punked by the Lakers or LeBron or Rich Paul or anybody else. I think that, you know, they probably anticipated that something like this would happen, that Anthony Davis probably wouldn't pick up, you know, or sign his extension this summer. But I don't think they expected him to demand a trade this season and to kind of just put everything that they had sort of planned for, you know, this season to kind of just crumble. And I think that out of pettiness and then also out of the possibility that there'd be better deals, you know, down the road in the summer, they still don't know who's going to wind up the number one pick. That could be the Knicks. You know, that could be somebody else who maybe wanted to make a move. And right now they have to do what's best for their organization. You know, Anthony Davis made it clear that he wants to do what's best for himself. But as long as he's under contract with the Pelicans, they don't have to give him what he wants.
What do you think was the bigger storyline? Anthony Davis wanting the trade and making it
you know, out there making it vocal, or the fact that the Lakers wanted the deal and everybody knew in the room that LeBron and Magic were willing to do the deal at any cost?
You know, I think it's a bigger deal for the Lakers players that, you know, everybody's name was mentioned as being available. That can do wonders for a locker room in terms of security and making everyone feel like we have to do this for each other. But I think they all understand the business, but it's different when you see every single name attached to the trade rumors. It's hard to look over your shoulder and know who and what to trust. I think the bigger story is just that Anthony Davis, you know, it's been a story that's been building for years about when he finally was going to say, it's time for me to go. But I think the way he handled it, that's going to be interesting to see how he handles now being viewed as a villain, you know, around the league, because I think he was able to sort of go through without any scrutiny, any negative publicity, any failures of his team was always blamed on the organization and not him. And I think now he's going to be looked at through a different prism. So him coming out and publicly saying, I want out, I think will change the perception of him. And I think now that these other Laker guys are, they got to stay in LA, it's probably going to change the dynamics within that locker room, because they all know that that probably won't be long for them, even if it's not for a deal for Anthony Davis, that their futures are insecure.
Michael Lee is our guest, senior writer for The Athletic NBA. I think it's going to be an ugly look, and you and I for years have been going back and forth. You know, it drives me crazy when healthy NBA players get rest for no reason. If Anthony Davis is playing in a game and it's the fourth quarter and there's 6 minutes left and his team is down by four and he's on the bench, how bad of a look is that going to be for Anthony Davis? Not the organization, but for AD, knowing he's healthy, he wants to play, but the coaching staff won't put him in.
I don't think we've ever seen a dynamic like this. I mean, we've seen teams shut down their star players at the end of the season, you know, to tank and, you know, get their draft position built up. But never a situation where a guy demands a trade and you know he's going to be traded in the summer at some point, and you just don't play him, or you don't play him the way you normally would for fear of injury. It's a really unique situation. I mean, he already told them he doesn't want to be there, and he feels like he's given that franchise all that he can. I feel like it's with that well within their rights to just say, okay, well, if you've given us all you're going to give us, then we're done. We're done here. That I thought was probably the one flaw of the whole situation. I mean, having, you know, his agent come out and make a public declaration, I think if it had just been handled quietly, if he had just said, hey, I'm not going to re-sign this extension this summer, do it as you will, and then just sort of put that in their hands and let them determine what's going to happen, he could have gone out there, professionally done his job, and they would probably have taken care of him, you know. But once you sort of publicly put your franchise out there and put them in an awkward position, you sort of create this situation now where even though you may still just want to play because you love the hoop, you've already soured your relationship with your franchise, which has to move on and has to plan accordingly, but also doesn't want to risk losing you to a serious injury, which will make your trade value that much worse. So it's really an embarrassing situation for the Pelicans, the league, and for everyone involved, because we really can't see Anthony Davis play at his full strength, and we sort of just have to make a joke of this whole situation now.
Michael Lee, at Mr. Michael Lee, joins us, the senior writer for The Athletic NBA. What are your sources telling you about Kevin Durant, especially after he bit back at the media? I think he should stay in the Bay Area because they're moving into a brand new arena in San Francisco. I think that's a big part of the story of keeping this dynasty going as they're moving from Oakland to San Francisco. Do you believe that the Knicks will give him an opportunity to be the architect of the rebuild of the Knicks, and will that sway him more than moving into a new arena in San Francisco?
I think it's all in play. I think one of the things that's probably led to his frustration and his anger about all the speculation with the Knicks is that he's still focused on this season. He still wants to win a championship this season. And everybody's so, you know, looking ahead that they're sort of losing track of the fact that he's playing really great basketball. His team is playing really great basketball. And I know that comes with the territory. But I think that's something he's thinking about. It's definitely something to consider because, you know, he's won three championships. But if you look at it, the move to Golden State from a personal standpoint has been great for him. But from a publicity PR standpoint, it's probably been a nightmare for him because as great as he's been and winning two finals MVPs and outplaying LeBron the last two finals, it hasn't necessarily given him the acclaim or kind of changed, you know, his perception among fans in a positive way. If he goes to New York and becomes a legend and wins there, then all of a sudden people start changing the way they discuss him. You know, I think that for LeBron, when he went to Miami, once he won a championship, everyone kind of forgave him for the decision, and he was able to move on and now be considered the greatest, one of the greatest to ever play. For Durant, I think if he could go and rescue a Knicks franchise that had been dormant pretty much for 45 years, I think that would boost his legacy in a way that, you know, that's the same way it did for LeBron. I mean, look at it. Walt Frazier said that there should be an asterisk attached to Kevin Durant's name, which was a really kind of a poor statement to make, but this is a Knicks legend that basically said he doesn't respect what he's doing. You think if he went to championship in New York that he'd respect what he did?
Absolutely. It would be a complete legacy play that would be a skyrocket for him up the leaderboard of legends to ever play the game. Michael, one more on the way out. Anything on Kawhi Leonard, or is there another free agent story brewing in the offseason that you don't think is getting enough coverage and that said player could have a bigger impact than we're talking about today?
There's so many guys. I mean, right now you got Kawhi, you got Kyrie, and you have Jimmy Butler. You know, I think those are going to be the three guys after Kevin Durant that people are going to be trying to see what happens. You know, right now Jimmy Butler's in a great situation in Philadelphia. They're winning games, but he seems to be an odd fit. And now that they've added Tobias Harris, he could be the odd man out in terms of how they build this team going forward. So it's going to be some interesting to watch him, you know, this summer and what becomes of him. And also the whole Kyrie situation with the Celtics, the fact that he made a very public declaration that he was coming back, and then he sort of hedged it a week ago. He's somebody to keep your eye on, because seeing him going to New York and possibly teaming up with Durant, or even just going to Brooklyn and playing there and being the face of that franchise, you know, he's a New Jersey kid whose dad grew up in the Bronx. The storylines are rich. So there are a lot of free agent plays to look at this summer, and it's something that we love discussing and speculating on. But there is a lot of good basketball going on right now.
That's for sure, Michael. I always value your time. Thanks so much for the great insight. I appreciate it.
At any time, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Michael Lee, I'll give him a follow at Mr. Michael Lee. Interesting point that he said there on the way out about Kevin Durant. Whoever goes to the Knicks and leads the Knicks to greatness, because the Knicks haven't won since the 70s. Do we get that? I was there for the Patrick Ewing era. He didn't win. He went to two NBA finals. They did not win. So for them to win a championship, whoever does it, forget about the name. It could be Durant. Go down the list. It might be Zion Williamson, right? The kid out of Duke. He could be the guy who leads the Knicks to greatness. Whoever does it in the number one media market in New York will add to their legacy more so than other legends who came before them. You might not be a New Yorker. You might not care about it. It's fact, not fiction. Because the Lakers and the Celtics will never be moved out as 1 and 1A. Whoever you think, Lakers or Celtics, Celtics or Lakers. So nobody else is ever going to be the Lakers and the Celtics. So if you can take a team like the Knicks and make them great, then we're all good. And I think Durant has got to be thinking about that. I know New York thinks that they have the ability to get him. The question is, will the Warriors let Durant go? Because I think that new building that Durant's moving into, I'd stay. I wouldn't move out. If I was building a brand new house and it was about to open, I wouldn't move out. Right before I opened it and got the keys, I'd go there, at least live there for a year, throw a couple of parties and check it out, then move on. But we'll see what Durant does. His ego, he's got an ego. Dan Chonka just checked in, the legendary scout, on the AAF and the impact now of the draft and those defensive players coming out. We'll get to Dan Chonka. He'll join us next.
Marshall throwing it back, and it's caught for the touchdown! The Orlando Special!
AAF on CBS. I liked it. I like the new football league. I'm rooting for him. I hope it does well. It just gives us more football to watch. Dan Chonka, kind enough to join us, the former scout with the Eagles, the Redskins, the Chief, and he's the GM scout for Our Lads, the NFL scouting NFL firm that does, I believe, the best job, top to bottom. Go pick up Our Lads at ourlads.com. Dan, thanks for waiting and coming on with us. What do you think about the debut of the AAF?
I tell you, I absolutely loved it. This is taking you back a ways, but about 40-some years ago, when I was about 19 years old, I started a a semi-pro team, they called it in those days, and I had such great enthusiasm. I just got off a knee operation from playing college football, and I saw this little ad in the paper about playing Omaha. Anyway, I put together a team, and that enthusiasm that I had back then was about what I had watching this game, because I was so excited for the league and for the people I know that are involved in the league and the players and the coaches. You know, JT, we needed a league like this for a long time because, you know, this throwaway society we have, these players, they get cut and sometimes they never get that opportunity again because we don't have NFL Europe and you know, things like that. So when this came about, I thought this was really a great thing for all these players to get cut and then they get an opportunity again. Because when I was looking at several of these guys, I mean, you know, they're just a click away from, you know, being on an NFL roster. And so I think that I was very enthused and will continue to go forward. And then in our database, actually, JT, most of these guys are in our database, and we're setting up the framework now for the, you know, to have the depth charts up there on a weekly basis. My web guy is doing that, but the depth charts that some of the teams sent me, so people could have them, take a look at them. We'll do that same thing. But anyway, long story short, I thought it was great and really happy that they started the league.
Dan Shanka joins us, the acclaimed scout, the leader of Our Lads. And Dan, there was a violent play in that game, when the San Antonio-San Diego game, where an edge rusher came in and took the quarterback's helmet off. And that's what everybody seems to be tweeting about and talking about, other than the fact that the AAF drew 2.9 million viewers for CBS last night. So when you hear about a violent play and young fans liking that because they believe that that league is going to allow more violence than the NFL, that seems to be throwing more flags, that's not accurate, right? The AAF is not going to be successful because their league might be a little bit more violent, correct?
That's absolutely right, JT. They're interested in protecting the players, too, I think, with, you know, all the equipment upgrades and things like that. But I think Burevici better get a helmet that fits him because that thing popped off a couple times, and that's his fault. That's not... I mean, not only a bone-shattering, you know, hit by Moore on the other side, the Commanders, but, hey, you better strap that thing up tight and pretend it's a motorcycle helmet and you're headed down the highway and you just flipped it. So you better have that on tight.
Dan Shanka joins us. Tell me what you think of Kyler Murray, because of the success of Baker Mayfield and some of the quarterbacks that we've seen as of late, smaller ones from Johnny Manziel, who was epic in college and won the Heisman Trophy. And then we see the athletic plays of Patrick Mahomes outside the pocket. I'm looking at the Raiders at number four, who have Derek Carr, let alone the Giants, who need a quarterback coming up here. Kyler Murray's a baseball player. What are your sources telling you about his passion for football and how high could he possibly go in the upcoming draft?
Well, that's a sticky wicket, JT. I think that with Kyler Murray, I called Oakland, their scouting department, and then I talked to Perfect Game, and they're a big national organization that works out the high school guys and goes to college games and all that. And I wanted to get a verified, you know, height, weight on, and if I could, a speed. Obviously, a speed is not going to be a problem, but, you know, but Oakland didn't give me anything. And then when I call Perfect Game, I know them, a lot of the I know the owner of the organization, everything, and the scouts. And so they did not have a verified, you know, like we do in the NFL. We go ahead and we got them against the wall, you know, with your toes up and your barefoot. You know, you cut right through that thick hair like Mahomes has and to get his exact height. But they don't do that. But one of the scouts told me he was at baseball practice in Oklahoma, stood next to Kyler Murray, and he said Murray's pushing 5'9", but he said he could probably shrink him down even a little more than that, and he's 175 pounds. So he's not a big guy. And as you know, JT, physics play a big part in the NFL, and that's not a good sign for Murray. Of course, you know, you've got to get him before you tackle him because he is a – you know, a little squiggly worm out there, and you can't hardly grab him with jitterbug around. But once you do hit him, you know, it might be stretcher time.
wrapping it up with Dan Shonker from Our Lads. Dan, finally, this draft coming up, some people believe it's the strongest defensive line draft that we've seen in maybe a decade. Could there be four players, one through four, taken on the defensive line from tackles to edge rushers? Do you believe in this draft, if you want to get a defensive impact player, it's worth trading into the top five so you get one of these elite superstars?
Well, I tell you, I don't know about trading up, but because depending on where you're at, you're going to be sitting there, and one of those big dogs may fall right into your lap, because there is a ton of them, and you're exactly right. And, you know, whether you're talking inside guys that can rush like Quinnen Williams from Alabama, you know, or you want a stuffer, run stuffer like Dexter Lawrence, you know, Christian Wilkins, now people aren't talking about him, and he may be the best of them all before – you know, his career is over. He's a terrific football player. And then on the edge, you got a Nick Bosa, who's the best pass rusher in this draft. I don't think there's any question about that. Cleveland Farrell from Clemson, we really like. Hey, Rashawn Gary, if he's over the injury, he's a beast. Because, I mean, he ran four or five. The coaches up there at Michigan told me he ran four or five something, you know, when they ran him 2 years ago. So, the 290-pound guy. So, there's a lot of big-time defensive players out there that, but, you know, people go crazy over quarterbacks. And if you need a quarterback, which, you know, probably six might be the start for the quarterbacks. And we got Haskins up there. So, but hey, maybe the top five could very well be defensive players because, hey, there's no big time receiver out there, maybe no big time corner. Greedy Williams, pretty good. So, hey, there could be five defenders right up front.
Everybody go to ourlads.com, ourlads.com. It is a game changer. If you're a diehard football fan, a regular football fan, and you want to be completely up to speed for the NFL draft. Hey, Dan, great to catch up with you. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
You betcha. Always a pleasure, JT. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Dan. Dan Shonker, ourlads.com. Interesting now on Kyler Murray and how this affects the Raider draft. Do I believe that Murray should be taken fourth overall to be the franchise quarterback for the Raiders at four? No. Could my mind change in the next month? I would doubt it, but the one thing that the Raiders should do is they should get everybody hyped for that fourth pick. If someone wants that kid at number four and the Raiders don't, you better believe that the Raiders could trade back from number four to number five if they don't want Murray, or from number four to number six or seven to do it. That's a possibility. But John Gruden will make this decision on how good this Kyler Murray player can be. I've been trying to give everybody this information on the record. Everything's changed with Patrick Mahomes. The reason why Derek Carr, Matthew Stafford, and the highest paid quarterback to ever live, Kirk Cousins, not Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, guaranteed money, Kirk Cousins, $84 million. The reason why all of those players have slight question marks next to their name is Patrick Mahomes. Because Mahomes now has made it a point. If you don't have him, you're not going to beat him. So if you go get Kyler Murray and he turns out to be, dare I say, as good as Mahomes, or maybe better because he's a freak, then you got a guy who can beat with Mahomes for 10 years. Get it? If you don't have that guy and you got a guy who's really good like Derek Carr and Matthew Stafford and Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo, but you can't beat Mahomes, what's the point? You can't beat the guy who's going to go to the Super Bowl maybe three, four times in the next 10, 12 years. That's how good Mahomes is. He can go to multiple Super Bowls through the AFC West. You don't think John Gruden's aware of that? I know he's aware of it, and that's something that the Raiders need to combat here in the draft and figure it out. Thanks to Grimaldi's. We have two Grimaldi's $50 gift cards for this week that we'll give out to callers. You've ever heard of the callers, Bobby? They're out there. We just have to give them pizza to get them to interact with us. Grimaldi's gift cards in play this week, and I'm looking forward to going out to Knights games. The Knights are in town for an extended period of time after they drop their first game of the homestand. We'll wrap it up next.
Into the zone, two-man cutting, score! Cody Eakin! 3-2 Golden Knights with 10:39 to go in the third. Belmar up the left side, found the trailer, Cody Eakin. Ryan Reeves crashing the net. He drew the attention. Cody Eakin found the puck. He rips it home.
Dan Duva on the call, your Vegas Golden Knights radio network, based right here in our studio. Thrilled to have them as a partner, just like Henderson Hyundai, their superstore. When we talk hockey, we talk about the super deals that you're looking for, the Henderson Hyundai superstore. If you're down in Henderson, Boulder Highway, get off and take a look. Talk hockey with Frank and the team there. They have great deals with pre-owned, brand-new vehicles, brand-new cars that you weren't aware of on that lot, and they're all die-hard hockey fans. One last thing on the Golden Knights, looking at the standings here. Calgary has got 74 points. San Jose's got 73. And the Golden Knights have 66. They're 8 points behind Calgary. That's significant. And the Sharks have won 5 in a row. So the Flames have lost 2 in a row. The Knights have lost 1 in a row. And the Sharks are one of the hottest teams in all of hockey. St. Louis currently on a 6-game win streak in the Western Conference. So all Vegas has to do is take care of home ice the rest of the way. And they're going to have a great seed and they're going to be fine in the playoffs. What they can't do is lose home games to competitive teams coming up here and get buried behind Calgary and San Jose. Because they're going to have to beat the Sharks or the Flames eventually in the Western Conference playoffs if they want to get back to the Cup again. But they want to keep them in striking distance. Thanks for Bobby who put these show together. Thanks to Dan Shanka. Michael Lee from The Athletic on the NBA. Busy shows all week long. Shane Knighty will join us tomorrow, the analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights, as we get you ready for the next few home games. PT's, the place I go for happy hour from 5 to 7. The best one in town in the new PT's Gold, the location Cactus and Las Vegas Boulevard. From that location all the way to the Strat, it's PT's.